What I would say is there needs to be more solidarity towards the Palestinian people. People need to be more vocal.
Generell ist es schon so, dass gerade
in general there is an extreme division between feminist movements, between the global north and the global south. Because people are saying, why aren't you saying anything? Why are you silent about Palestine?
And then we could just spend hours debating on why these funders are pulling out the funds, but the reality is that they are.
Because it is so sensitive and it's so easy to be seen as taking one side or the other side. But I'm, from our perspective, we take the side of the victims and stand up for human rights. It's not taking side either or, it's standing up for the civilians, for the women being targeted, like being in the middle of the war.
Welcome to episode 3 of our 4-part series of Our Voices, Our Choices on Feminism and War. This episode is about solidarity. Solidarity in spite of war. This episode will not only address the escalation of violence in the Middle East and the war in Gaza, it is also about transnational feminist solidarity.
Our Voices, Our Choices. Der geschlechterpolitische Podcast der Heinrich Böll Stiftung.
Among other things, we will talk about how transnational feminist solidarities are coming more and more under pressure. This isn't new. Feminist solidarities have been under pressure for some time now. For example, from the growing anti-gender movement, which is now also present in some parliaments and is increasingly restricting feminist work and queer rights. But in recent months, transnational feminist solidarities have faced an additional strain. There are different, sometimes irreconcilable positions on the current war in Gaza. Also, there are conflicts over funding, which is essential for feminist work on the ground. Already there have been cases that indicate that some important feminist actors who publicly express criticism have had their funding withdrawn. This may be because the organizations as goals are not to the liking of the growing right-wing forces, or because, as in Germany, organizations as statements on the Middle East are being checked for quote-unquote foreign policy harmlessness. The perspectives, analyses, and needs of those directly affected by the escalating violence in Israel, Palestine, and the surrounding region, along with those working in this context, are often overlooked, as are the solutions we so urgently need. It is crucial now more than ever to discuss the terrorist attack by Hamas on Israel on October 7, 2023, and the subsequent war between Israel and Hamas in the Gaza Strip in an objective and nuanced manner, given the highly polarized debate and the public hostility directed towards journalists, activists, and organizations. This task can be challenging. For this episode as well, finding interviewees willing to speak openly was not easy. A feminist perspective on war and peace delves into the complicated emotional and controversial aspects of these topics. We recognize that the selection and content of individual statements in this episode may offend some people's personal or political beliefs. Additionally, this episode may not cover all viewpoints and is only one piece of a larger conversation regarding the possibilities and limitations of feminist solidarity and alliances during wartime. It presents excerpts that reflect a complex situation at a specific point in time, namely September and October 2024. The only way we can effectively contribute to dialogue and understanding is by making controversial viewpoints heard, as we do in this episode. The suffering of one person in this war does not diminish the suffering of another individual who is also impacted by it. We are very grateful to my two interview partners for their open exchange. You heard them at the beginning, Eryx Cortez and Xenia Kellner. Eryx is from Colombia and works at the Urgent Action Fund for Latin America and the Caribbean as the Institutional Learning and Philanthropic Advocacy Coordinator. Initially, we needed clarification on what that role entails.
I work mainly with donors. What I do is trying to engage our alliances. Some are donors, some are other funds, and some are other organizations that work kind of in the same field, feminist funds or other human rights funds, and donors as well. And what we do is we try to just bring the voices of the organizations, bring the voices of the movements, and bring their demands and their needs, and also their celebrations, you know, like the things they have accomplished, the things they do to continue transforming the world, basically.
The Urgent Action Fund was established 25 years ago and now includes four independent funds, each serving the regions of Latin America and the Caribbean, Asia and the Pacific, and Africa, as well as the Urgent Action Fund for Feminist Activism. The core principle of the Urgent Action Fund is to provide unbureaucratic support to movements that may struggle to write funding applications. As the name Urgent suggests, the fund aims to offer quick assistance in critical situations, such as during a war. For instance, the Urgent Action Fund for Feminist Activism is currently supporting feminist activists in Ukraine and has provided nearly $300,000 to 50 recipients in Palestine since October 2023. The fund emphasizes initiatives led by women, trans, and non-binary activists, specifically addressing gaps in humanitarian aid. It is important to clarify that Eric's is not speaking on behalf of the Urgent Action Fund as a whole, but rather from the perspective of the Regional Fund for Latin America, which is not involved in aid for Ukraine or the Middle East. Nonetheless, Eric's is concerned with these issues when engaging with donors.
There are plenty of funders who don't want to make a, they don't want to make a clear statement. There have been some funds that are close to us that have been defunded because of their mainstream position on the genocide in Gaza, and there are definitely some donors that don't want their partners to be vocal. We have been very fortunate with most of our donors who have been, you know, they have a position, they have a set position, but they don't force their or the organizations they fund to have the same position as they do. We have been always positioned ourselves in a place of, okay, let's talk, what does this mean? And let's also hear what our grantees need, and we will position ourselves in solidarity with our grantees and the organizations that we fund.
You heard it. Eric's uses the term genocide in connection with Israel's actions in Gaza. This characterization is now being adopted not only by activists, but also by politicians, historians, and international law experts around the world, even though it has not yet been legally established. Genocide is a criminal offense under international law and has a precise definition. On October 29, 2023, South Africa submitted a petition to the International Court of Justice, or the ICJ, against Israel, accusing it of committing genocide during the conflict in the Gaza Strip. Other countries, including Spain, Nicaragua, Colombia, Libya, and Mexico, are supporting this lawsuit. While it may take years for the ICJ to reach a decision, a majority of the ICJ judges considers the initial suspicion that Israel might commit genocide in Gaza to be at least plausible. The ICJ has issued several interim orders, primarily emphasizing the urgent need for significantly more humanitarian aid to be delivered to the Gaza Strip. The usefulness and applicability of the term genocide in this debate remains controversial, according to Xenia Kellner of Young Feminist Europe.
Es ist noch nicht festgestellt.
The legal situation has not yet been determined, but it is crucial to have a discourse about it. However, in Germany, this discussion is being completely suppressed due to financial pressures. As a result, all the people who talk about it no longer receive funding. Certain words or phrases have become so charged that when mentioned, people instantly label them as anti-Semitic. This creates a deliberate narrowing of the discourse, making it impossible to address the situation in a scientific manner. There is a sort of language ban, in effect, which is also enforced through financial means.
Withdrawing funding due to certain statements doesn't constitute a direct language ban. However, the scandalization and stigmatization of legal terms, along with the organizations that use them, creates a political environment in which organizations must consider the balance between expressing their views and maintaining their financial viability. Funding, whether from the government, private foundations, or individual donors, is essential for civil society organizations to fully carry out their missions. For instance, in episode 2 of the series, we see examples such as establishing a postnatal ward in Gaza, or assisting women in Yemen and Sudan who have been disowned by their families after experiencing wartime rape. Financial resources for these projects have always been limited, And according to Eric Cortez of the Urgent Action Fund, they are becoming increasingly scarce.
It has been shifting. And also, there has been a shift to the right in most of the governments that used to fund this type of work. You know, the philanthropic sector of bilaterals, you know, have been shifting a lot towards the right. And this is also something, this is also a trend that is happening, that has been happening since last year. And we have been seeing the effects of this. There has been definitely a shift that they don't want to continue funding feminist issues. They don't want to continue funding the most explicit types of themes that we work on. Sometimes they do not want to fund trans issues. There are some donors that really don't want the trans word to be mentioned throughout anything that you do. And there are some funders that are just shifting the possibility of, you know, this notion of development that used to be like that was created several decades ago. That was the was the main reason why these organizations were funding, you know, in the global south and so-called third world at some point. And now they want to shift this type of funding more in a nationalistic way. There are some organizations, there are some funders that want to continue this, just using these funds internally or, you know, whatever the reasons are. As I was saying, like, this is a political discussion and we could just spend hours debating on why these funders are pulling out the funds. But the reality is that they are, and this is shifting, and some feminist organizations are losing lots of funding. As of last 2 to 3 years, I think it's been worse.
Annika Flensborg from the Swedish women's rights organization Kina Till Kina has a similar experience. This organization primarily operates in war and crisis zones. You may recall Annika as one of the key figures in episode 2, which addresses the issue of reproductive violence.
I mean, you see, democracies are rolling back. There is a democratic backslide at the same time that the anti-gender movements are increasing. And it's not just in wartime, but like globally, if you see, there are powerful, like the far right movements that see also this traditional view of women as reproductive, like the family and should have kids for the nation, etc. That kind of logic, and the anti-abortion, and yeah, so there is a toxic mix of forces coming together, and we see that very strongly. And we did a report about the situation for women human rights defenders last year. We do that continuously. And last year, we saw that the threats are increasing and increasingly coming from their own governments, which also shows that the authoritarianism is increasing and it's the space for them to act is shrinking. So they actually need more support because they are absolutely key for change to happen.
In this already tense situation, many organizations have to navigate a delicate diplomatic balancing act. They need to demonstrate commitment and solidarity without taking a definitive stance. In Germany, for instance, funding from the Foreign or Development Ministry typically does not go directly to civil society organizations abroad. Instead, it is funneled through German organizations that have established project partnerships in the respective countries. Many of these organizations have expressed concern that in recent years, the approval of project funding has increasingly been tied to adherence to legally non-binding criteria, such as the public stance of partner organizations regarding the war in Gaza or the Boycott, Divestment, Sanctions, or BDS movement. The Foreign Office evaluates all partner organizations abroad for what is termed, quote-unquote, foreign policy harmlessness. However, the criteria for this evaluation lack transparency. This situation exacerbates the already precarious funding environment for feminist causes, according to Xenia Kellner.
Was ich höre, weil ich ja viele in diesen ganzen Organisationen kenne.
What I've learned from my connections in various organizations is that they have all conducted risk analysis. Many of these organizations have a specific base in Germany, but are also represented in different countries internationally. They must assess the risks associated with communicating on this topic in Germany to avoid losing funding. Recently, Germany has cut funding to numerous feminist organizations which are crucial for anti-oppressive work and the fight against authoritarian regimes, and they've cancelled partnerships as well. This has created a secondary censorship effect on discourse in Germany. Many German organizations are cautious about speaking out, fearing that if they do, they may jeopardize their ability to find project partners, which is a very real concern.
Annika Flensborg from Kina Till Kina also knows the feeling of being caught in between, not just in terms of funding, but also in terms of discourse. Among other things, the organization supports pregnant women and mothers in Gaza.
In Sweden, at least, it's quite solidarity, but it's more this, how do we talk? But it is still, how do we talk about it? Is it like when we come together, how do we, because it is so sensitive and it's so easy to be seen as taking one side or the other side. But I'm, from our perspective, we take the side of the victims and stand up for human rights. It's not taking side either or, it's standing up for the civilians, for the women being targeted, like being in the middle of the war and there is no protection. And from our perspective, we see definitely that Israel is committing war crimes because it's indiscriminate. What we see, it's a total destruction of the civilian structure, of farmlands, of houses, of hospitals. And we stand for that, and we stand against violence. So for us, it shouldn't be as difficult, but it becomes difficult because it's so polarized.
Many organizations don't publicly discuss funding loss or even the anxiety surrounding potential funding cuts. However, the Egyptian NGO CELA, Center for Egyptian Women's Legal Assistance, which focuses on combating human trafficking and violence against women, has chosen to address this issue openly.
Und Ägypten, da ist es sowieso ganz schwer.
In Egypt, supporting civil society organizations is particularly challenging due to restrictions on foreign funding. Many organizations struggle to receive money from abroad because it is often regarded as foreign influence. For instance, one organization received funding from the German embassy for a specific project. However, when they signed a petition addressing the illegal occupation of Israel and Palestine, mentioning terms like apartheid and genocide, their funding was subsequently cut. This decision was justified on the basis that their support for the petition did not align with the standards expected by Germany for funding.
In autumn 2023, the Egyptian NGO CELA co-signed a statement along with approximately 250 civil society organizations calling for a ceasefire and demanding boycotts and sanctions against Israel. These demands align with the BDS movement. This connection was the reason the German Foreign Office withdrew funding for CELA's human trafficking project in November 2023. In response, an open letter was issued by other NGOs expressing solidarity with CELA and criticizing German foreign policy, stating that while the government claims to be feminist, its actions contradict these principles. This show of solidarity led to the renowned Egyptian Initiative for Personal Rights suspending its cooperation with the German government. The defunding of CELA has generated significant controversy, but is not an isolated incident. This development has sparked confusion and disappointment among civil society organizations worldwide. Moreover, such actions by funders exacerbate the existing divisions within the global feminist movement, according to Xenia Kellner.
Generell ist es schon so, dass gerade
in general, there is an extreme divide between feminist movements, between the global north and global south. Because people are saying, why don't you say anything? Why are you silent about Palestine? Why are you silent about Gaza? Why are you silent about Lebanon? Why are you silent about the fact that human rights are not being respected, that war crimes are being committed? Where is the solidarity? You have to hold your states and governments accountable and tell them that.
Since I work in the Origin Action Fund for Latin America and the Caribbean, this is not part of our scope of work. But what I would say is there needs to be more solidarity towards the Palestinian people. People need to be more vocal, and not only to the Palestinian, but all like through the whole Levant, because this is part of the violence that we've that we've been witnessing so far in Lebanon as well, shows how big this machinery is. So I think we definitely need to continue talking about this. Even in Latin America, a lot of our grantees have also, you know, in Latin America, we stand, like most of the organizations and movements and civil rights movements stand with Palestine. And there have been massive protests. There have been actions of solidarity throughout the whole region, because this is something that affects everybody. You know, this is not something, an issue for the Middle East. This is not only an issue of the Palestinian people. Like, what the Palestinian people are going through is something that we as colonized countries understand. And in no way I will say that we have been feeling the same. We have not experienced exactly this at all. But we understand somehow where it comes from and what it feels like. And I think this needs to continue happening. And what the organizations need from funders is to continue just, you know, being with them and not abandoning them when they are standing in solidarity with other oppressed peoples.
International solidarity is currently lacking, and this concern extends beyond just the Palestinians. Many Israeli feminists have expressed disappointment in the limited support they receive from international feminists. This issue became particularly evident following the sexualized violence perpetrated by Hamas on October 7th. For more background on this topic, you can listen to episode 1 of this podcast series. Some segments of the pro-Palestinian feminist movement are also contributing to this division. The polarized debates and the immense suffering on all sides leave little room for nuance and ambivalence within organizations, parties, and movements. To foster more constructive discussions and alliance building despite differing perspectives, partnerships and resources are essential to create safe spaces for these complex debates. In recent years, many German institutions, such as political foundations, civil society organizations, and state bodies, have dedicated more resources to cooperating with and strengthening feminist and human rights grassroots organizations in the Global South. But now, at a time when these resources and partnerships are needed more than ever, these long-established relationships are breaking down, often because of positions taken by the organizations. Some NGOs no longer want to accept money from German institutions or be associated with them. In other cases, as you have already heard, funding is cut off because German donors terminate cooperation due to certain wordings or positions taken by the NGOs. These decisions are often the result of fierce debates within the organizations, but this rarely becomes publicly visible, as in the case of the Egyptian NGO Sila. What is evident is that German foreign policy, along with the actions of German state or state-sponsored institutions, is facing a crisis of credibility.
Germany has always positioned itself on the global stage as a champion of human rights, women's rights, and as an opponent of authoritarian regimes. They've said that they strengthen international cooperation, that they strengthen civil society and feminist organizations. And of course, they have also been happy to tell other countries and other people what is right and wrong. Numerous cultural and political institutions, such as political foundations, the Goethe Institute, and various civil society organizations, have invested significant effort in building trust. This trust-building work has been essential for fostering collaboration and negotiation. However, I believe that Germany's current actions have genuinely shocked many and led to a profound loss of trust among various stakeholders in the global arena.
Und ich glaube schon, dass es so einen richtigen Schock ausgelöst hat bei ganz vielen und wirklich einen kompletten Vertrauensverlust bei ganz vielen im globalen Bereich, was Deutschland eigentlich jetzt gerade macht.
Germany's strong commitment to a feminist foreign and development policy has been crucial for earning international recognition, which is now in jeopardy. Since 2023, guidelines have been established to foster global feminist cooperation, building on the relationships of trust that have been carefully cultivated over time.
Auch wenn es feministische Außenpolitik heißt, ist es
even though it's called feminist foreign policy, it's important to recognize that it's actually not something that just takes place externally. It's actually a redefinition. Many people have viewed it as simply exporting our values based on the belief that we uphold human rights standards while others do not, something like that. However, with feminist foreign policy, the focus is not on exporting something. Instead, it emphasizes the need to acknowledge the significant power we hold within the global system. And in order for that to change, we actually have to first learn internally where we unfairly hold more power than others. Where are resources not properly distributed?
At an event marking the 45th anniversary of the UN Convention on Women's Rights, shortly before our interview, Xenia Kellner explained the new different approach as follows.
One of my favorite quotes is, if you have come here to help me, you're wasting your time. But if you've come here because your liberation is bound up with mine, then let us work together. And I think that needs to really be applied to a lot of different levels, moving from just solidarity to really co-liberation and, yeah, shifting power.
It's an intriguing sentence because it emphasizes liberation as a central goal for international feminist movements. This approach is unusual for both sides, which is why building trust is crucial. Unfortunately, that trust is currently being undermined once again.
Part of that is building trust and building relationships, because there is still a lot of distrust between Global North and Global South feminist movements. And I think over the past years, we have managed to built more, but I've also seen that in the past year some of that trust has been lost again.
What is growing, however, is the self-confidence of activists in the Global South who are increasingly connecting with each other and raising their voices at an international level. At the same time, financial power still lies squarely with the countries of the Global North. These nations, through their funding, have the ability to influence which issues are prioritized on the political agenda, as they can set the funding criteria. The recipients in the Global South and North could, of course, also refuse money, at least in theory, says Eric Cortez.
This is a thin line, you know, because we can choose where we take the money from, but the possibility of having this amount of money to donate will also always come from a kind of questionable place, if I say so. But, you know, like, this is something that we have to balance out. Our region needs money. The organizations we fund need money. And this is also understanding that these come from resources that were basically stolen from our regions at some point in history. So we really appreciate the effort of the philanthropic sector and of donors to, you know, do this type of reparations. So yes, we know some funds come from a place that might not be very... I don't know, that come from a place that is not great or very healing. But this process of giving back is also part of the healing, you know.
Simultaneously, the Urgent Action Fund and others are working to create new support structures and forms of solidarity.
We understand that most of the money comes from the Global North, but there are also interesting possibilities of resourcing throughout the Global South. And this is also something that is part of our principles in Latin America. It's just, you know, trying to gather solidarity, not only solidarity in the work that we do, but also in the possibilities of fundings. We are trying to also work outside of our silos, and we have been, you know, creating alliances and nurturing alliances that we have outside of this feminist realm in order to be able to move more resources throughout our causes. So this is something that has definitely helped us.
Transnational feminist alliances have faced significant challenges since the events of October 7th and the subsequent period. However, new alliances are emerging that may be more regional, yet span across different themes. What still unites us? How much networking and compromise are necessary? Where can we discover new collaborative efforts? The answers found by Xenia Kellner and Eric Cortez are quite similar.
Yeah, we have been trying to organize and just this creating solidarity throughout movements. I think this is one of the most powerful things that we can do right now. Just work with other sectors that not necessarily call themselves feminists, but are working in feminist issues and are working in things that affect us all.
Ich glaube, was wir halt sehen,
I think what we are seeing is that there is an alliance of anti-oppressive movements, and the feminist movement, if you think of it intersectionally and decolonially, is actually an anti-oppressive movement. It's really exciting to see the movements in the Global South connect with that. I think it's really exciting to look at it that way and not to see feminist movements as just women's movements, for example. With the global agenda, especially from the Global South, it's more about saying a feminist agenda breaks down systems of injustice as a whole and deals with power structures and tries to shift them. In my experience, nobody needs the help of the German organization or Germany to better understand this. But on the contrary, there is a much better understanding of how these different structures interact and how systems change.
Perhaps the real question is not who is in solidarity with whom, but rather, what does solidarity actually mean? The term goes back to the Latin word solidus, and that has many meanings. For example, lasting, hard, secure, or complete. Perhaps it is best captured by the idea of an attitude that emphasizes connection. Connection to the ideas, activists, and goals of others. The awareness that all of our freedom is connected. In episode 4 on gender-just freedom, you can listen more on existing cross-border feminist connections. You can listen to and subscribe to all episodes of Our Voices, Our Choices, and all other podcasts of the Heinrich Böll Foundation on the podcast app of your choice. For feedback and suggestions, please email us at podcast@böll.de and feel free to recommend us. This podcast is a production of the Audio Collective. This episode was produced by Franziska Walzer. Bye for now and see you next time. Our voices, our